Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, May 19th. I'm your reader, Kelly Neff. Let's start out today by taking a look at the weather. For today, there is a chance of showers and storms, with a northwesterly wind at 15 to 25 miles per hour. A high today will be 68, and the low will be 45. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, with a northerly wind at 5 to 15 miles per hour. The high tomorrow will be up to 72, and the low tomorrow night will be 50. On Sunday, mostly sunny, a southwesterly wind expected at 5 to 10 miles per hour. The high will be 76 and the low will be 51. Then, come Monday, mostly sunny with a southeasterly wind at 5 to 15 miles per hour, a high of 79 and a low of 64. Sunset tonight will be at 8:24. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:42. So today, we will have 14 hours and 41 minutes of sunlight. Today's top weather story in the Gazette is by meteorologist Jan Reihard, who says, "The latest drought monitor was released Thursday morning. It shows slight improvement for areas that were on the fringe of last week's dew or abnormally dry category, though most of eastern Iowa saw no change. We are entering a dry pattern, and there are no additional chances for rain ahead of the next drought monitor release. Last night's spotty showers are the only precipitation that will be accounted for in it. As of last Monday's crop report, 70% of the state was reported as having adequate topsoil moisture, while 17% of the state is rated short of very short. Western Iowa does have severe and extreme drought conditions, reported with most of the state west of I-35 in some kind of drought." And that's today's top weather story from meteorologist Jan Reihard. As we go back to the front page of today's Gazette, we find a story written by Aaron Jordan, says St. Luke's staff and patients create medical devices. Dateline, Cedar Rapids. Gene Weber wanted to literally smooth the way for premature babies. The neonatal intensive care unit nurse noticed when she wheeled an infant in an incubator bed from the delivery room at Unity Point Health St. Luke's Hospital into the elevator to take the baby to the NICU, the ridges where the elevator door closes caused the 300-pound bed to bump and rumble. Weber said, "Every time I wheeled the baby across that, I cringed. I would think, what is that baby hearing?" Weber went to St. Luke's Medical Innovation Laboratory called Generate, where she developed a device that spans the elevator entrance, keeping the doors open and creating a smooth ramp across the threshold. She's now refining the tool with a single piece of plastic for stability and handles so practitioners can position it without having to touch the floor. "My goal," she said, "is to make two of them so there is one on each floor and hang them at the elevator entrance." The tool was one of 30 featured this week at a maker fair at St. Luke's. Since the lab opened in November 2019, doctors, nurses, team members, and patients have developed more than 700 projects. That's according to Rose Hedges, St. Luke's Nursing Research and Innovation Coordinator. One of the device creators featured this week was 36-year-old Kyle Spading of Fairfax, who developed a combination stylus and pill box. Spading is a former tight end for the Iowa Hawkeyes. He injured his neck and spine in a rollover crash in 2011 and was in outpatient therapy at St. Luke's when he had the idea for the device. He said he came down with his dad and we got to work. The Medical Technology and Learning Lab on the hospital's main floor houses equipment that includes 3D printers, a laser cutter, drills, and saws. The space was created through a partnership with a Boston company called Maker Health and is the first hospital-based hands-on fabrication lab in the Midwest. Jose Gomez Marquez is a market health coordinator. He flew from Spain to Cedar Rapids for the Maker Faire at St. Luke's. Of the creators, he said, "I'm just really proud of these folks. You're not going to find a single designer or traditionally trained engineer. For most of them, they had never made anything before. Now they use these devices and tools like it's an extension of their natural training." Gomez Marquez talks about the St. Luke's Lab in his presentations around the world, and St. Luke's is further along than other hospitals attempting to create maker spaces for staff, he said. One thing he loves about the Cedar Rapids project is how healthcare providers and patients have space and time to create a project, fail, and then try again. St. Luke's staff have a couple of lab-developed projects in the process of becoming patented, according to Hedges, who said, "For others, staff make designs available open source so other healthcare providers can try them out." When the Gazette interviewed Hedges in December of 2019 about the new innovation lab, she said she hoped it would help with staff retention. She said at the time, "If you're engaged in your work, it's likely you're going to stay and keep doing what you're doing." But a few months later, COVID-19 struck, and healthcare providers were on the front lines working long hours in dangerous conditions to care for patients and reduce infection from a virus we knew very little about. During the pandemic, Hedges and Clayton Skousen developed a cloth face mask with a pocket for an air filter. They made the pattern available for free online, where it was downloaded in more than 100 countries, according to a 2020 Gazette article. A YouTube video with instructions on sewing the Olsen mask, which was named in honor of 1930s maker and nurse Lila May Olsen, now has 3.9 million views. Another device made in the innovation lab during the pandemic was a clear box used to reduce the spread of air droplets when a breathing tube was put down a COVID patient's throat. St. Luke's staff used the lab's laser cutter to engrave those stethoscopes as being for use on the COVID floor only. Although burnout from COVID-19 caused some healthcare practitioners nationwide to leave the profession, involvement in the St. Luke's makerspace seems to have contributed to better retention. Hedges said, "For about 350 users of the time, we asked them questions about feeling valued by leadership and about their involvement in the lab. We're eager to be able to share that in the fall. It's looking very nice." For Weber, the NICU nurse, having the skills and permission to develop tools to improve patient care has added to her job satisfaction. She said, "I feel they really value our ideas and are doing something about our ideas by having this available. I've tried all different ideas. Every time I come up with an idea, they are 100% willing to try." Also on the front page is a weather and health story written by Brittany J. Miller of the Gazette. Smoke from wildfires covers Iowa. Has the sky looked a bit hazy to you lately? Have sunsets seemed a bit off? You're not imagining it. Northern wildfires are the culprit. Wildfires began to sprout in Alberta, Canada in early May, bolstered by unusually warm, dry weather and strong winds. The province declared a state of emergency May 6th as more blazes erupt. As of May 10th, 136 wildfires burned throughout Canada, 31 of them which were uncontrolled at the time. More than 29,000 residents have since evacuated Alberta and the neighboring province of British Columbia. The resulting smoke from the blazes has wafted over much of the northern U.S. It started noticeably clouding Iowa skies around Tuesday, creating cloud-like cover and red hazy sunsets. That smoke was between 15 and 20,000 feet in the air. But as another round rolls through the state, it will be closer to the ground and, as a result, bring more of a health risk. The smoke started fanning across northwest Iowa Thursday morning. Meteorologist John Hassey of the National Weather Service and Quad Cities Bureau said, "We've had smoke in the summer several years in a row, prior to last summer." This is, I would say, the earliest in the year I've seen it. Some of the wildfires in question are more than 2,000 miles away from Cedar Rapids. So how did their smoke make its way to Iowa? And why is it just now becoming a health concern? Winds aloft, or as the winds at different levels of the atmosphere up above the surface level, are the cause. Specifically, their northwest direction that pushed them out of western Canada and toward Iowa, according to Hasse. While Iowa's skies have been hazy since Tuesday, the situation turned a bit riskier because of the cold front passing through the state. The cooler air sinks to the ground, bringing the smoke with it. The cold front was to hit Cedar Rapids in the early hours this morning. Visibility fell as low as 1 mile in Minnesota, Nebraska, and the Dakotas. Visibility in eastern Iowa should only drop to around 4 miles. While the haziness has been in the air for a few days, the smoke didn't significantly register on the Iowa Department of Natural Resources Air Quality Index until Thursday morning in northwest Iowa. That's because the monitors are close to ground level and didn't catch a whiff of smoke until it sunk with the cold front, according to John Gearing, who's the unit leader of Iowa's DNR Ambient Air Monitoring Group. On Thursday afternoon, the AQI Fire and Smoke Map depicted a wave of unhealthy air quality passing through Iowa. At first, locations would experience levels unhealthy for sensitive groups like older adults, children, and those with respiratory or heart disease. Then, as more smoke settled in, levels turned to those considered unhealthy for everyone. Gearing advised sensitive groups to move activities indoors or reschedule outdoor activities. The population should avoid prolonged or heavy exertion and take more breaks during outdoor activities. Farmers may be tending to their fields with smoke overhead, but Hasse said it shouldn't affect their crops. If the smoke gets thick enough, he said it could act like a cloud layer. Temperatures on the ground may be cooler than they would be otherwise, but sunlight still will make through to the plants below. Hasse said it's kind of like filtered sunshine. The northwest winds are changing course today when winds should start coming from the west, so smoke should clear out of Iowa by this afternoon, aside from some intermittent patches that may pass over through the weekend. But that most likely won't be the last Iowa sees of the haziness. Hasse said, with around 30 wildfires still raging out of control in Canada, more smoke is bound to travel southeast at some point. He said, it's all about which direction the winds are coming from. You've got to wait for another pattern change to a northwest flow again. At some point, it'll happen again, and I'm sure the smoke will come back again. Also on the front page, there's more health-related news in a story written by Vanessa Miller of the Gazette, which says UI Healthcare is second on the list of trusted healthcare brands. Dateline, Iowa City. A new report ranks University of Iowa Healthcare as the second most trusted healthcare brand in the country. The report from an independent consultant ranked more than 200 hospital and healthcare brands across 64 markets using feedback from more than 25,000 consumers. UIHC garnered positive feedback from 81% of the respondents, placing it just behind Emory Healthcare's 82% and ahead of other esteemed healthcare enterprises like Northwestern Medicine and the Mayo Clinic, which earned 79%, Johns Hopkins Medicine, achieving 77%, and Cedars-Sinai, University of Chicago Medicine and Duke Health, which placed farther down the list. Outgoing UIHC Vice President for Medical Affairs Brooks Jackson said in a statement, "Being named a most trusted healthcare brand is an honor that reflects the strong relationship with our patients, many of whom are generations of Iowa families who have received care with us." He went on to say, "It's a testament to our academic excellence and how our researchers, educators, providers, nurses, and care teams work together to give high-quality care and experiences for our patients and their families every day." UI Healthcare, including its expanding hospitals and clinics operations, which employ more than 11,000 people and racked up more than 1.3 million patient visits just last year, also ranked third on the consultant Monagles 2023 Humanizing Brand Experience list. Those rankings, looking at a healthcare brand's ability to connect with its patients' humanity, based entirely on consumer opinion and weighted by healthcare engagement in each market, put the Valley Health System in New Jersey at number one and Ohio Health at Columbus, Ohio at number two. UIHC topped Johns Hopkins Medicine at number four and University of Rochester Medical Center at number five in that category. This was the first year UIHC provided data to Denver-based Monagle, calling itself the largest independent brand consultant in the United States with 50 years' experience working across an array of industries like retail, food and beverage, energy, sports, and healthcare. The company's sixth annual Humanizing Brand Experience report looked at consumer trends, needs, and behaviors across the U.S. healthcare landscape, identifying challenges and room for improvement nationally and in Iowa. UIHC's top ranking in some of the report's categories comes as the $2.3 billion enterprise searches for a new vice president for medical affairs and CEO atop its hospitals and clinics operation. It comes as UIHC enters a construction boom, compelled by overwhelming patient demand that has emergency rooms crowded and appointment wait times growing. And it also comes at a time when hospitals and healthcare systems are struggling nationally, making consumer engagement and brand trust increasingly important to hospitals trying to stay afloat. The Monagle report, in assessing the impact of a hospital and healthcare system's brand, looked at healthcare engagement trends nationally, finding consumer engagement in healthcare its lowest than pre-COVID levels, with fewer people reading about health and wellness, trying new health approaches, and thinking about health generally. According to the report, quote, "The main reason might not be all that surprising to any of us. Everyone is exhausted by the overabundance of noise in the market. Pandemic fatigue has demotivated consumers and tamped down their interest to re-engage, making the return to pre-COVID levels even more challenging," end quote. When looking regionally at healthcare engagement, Iowa ranks third from the bottom on Monagle's list of 59 markets, earning a score of 96 compared with some of the most engaged communities like Miami, Columbus, Los Angeles, and Atlanta, all earning scores of at or over 120. Other communities or states with low marks in healthcare engagement were in Maine, Green Bay, Wisconsin, and Seattle. Digging deeper into the question of consumer trust and implications for overall engagement, the study found distrust is up, especially among 25 to 34-year-olds, with 42% affirming the statement that, "I don't always trust my healthcare provider to make the right decisions for me." Although UIHC ranked as the second most trusted healthcare brand, the state of Iowa had among the most doctor dodgers in the country. That group is defined as people avoiding the doctor even when they know they need to visit, and has spiked nationally from 11% of respondents in 2022 to 17% this year. Iowa has the third highest rate of doctor dodgers at 18%, tying other markets like St. Louis and New Orleans, and well above those with the lowest dodger rates like San Francisco, Miami, and Boston, who are at 11%. Behind some of the consumer avoidance is lack of staff, which three out of four respondents said healthcare operations need more workers. About 72% said healthcare organizations need to treat their workforce better. According to the report, which did not rank UIHC among the top 10 brands for staffing, said, quote, "We see that 54% of U.S. consumers believe that it's harder to get an appointment because of staffing shortages, and 52% believe the quality of care is worsening because of them," end quote. The University of Iowa did receive top national and regional scores for the quality of its people, its medical outcomes, its reputation, its innovation, and freedom to make independent health care choices. Moving to the Iowa Today page, we have a story about written by Emily Anderson, who says, "Man accused of birthday party shooting is arrested." Dateline, Cedar Rapids. A man was arrested last week in connection with a shooting during a birthday party in October 2021 in a Cedar Rapids hotel. 30-year-old Quoney Shelton is charged with 5 counts of willful injury, 5 counts of reckless use of a firearm, and 1 count each of using a dangerous weapon in the commission of a crime, plus going armed with intent and intimidation with a dangerous weapon. Shelton is accused of shooting into the crowd at a birthday party at the Ramada by Wyndham Hotel at 535 33rd Avenue Southwest in Cedar Rapids on October 1st, 2 years ago. 6 people were injured, according to police statements, shortly after the shooting. 5 people, Burrell Jackson, Kayla Richardson, Calvin Cameron, Andre Banks, and an unidentified juvenile, were listed in criminal complaints as having been injured by Shelton. Cameron and Banks suffered injuries that led to a prolonged debilitating impairment to an extremity, according to the criminal complaint. Shelton was arrested May 8th and is being held in the Linn County Jail on a cash-only bond of $250,000. In the same vein, we have a story also written by Emily Anderson of the Gazette. Second arrest made in Iowa City shooting. Dateline, Iowa City. A second man has been arrested in connection with a shooting in Iowa City last weekend that left 1 person injured, according to an Iowa City Police Department news release. Markel D. Poole, age 22, of West Des Moines, is charged with control of a firearm by a felon. It's the second arrest related to a shooting Saturday at the Clock Tower parking ramp in Iowa City. 22-year-old Alexander O. Volchevong of Iowa City was arrested earlier this week and charged with willful injury causing serious injury, reckless use of a firearm, intimidation with a dangerous weapon, going armed with intent, fourth-degree criminal mischief and assault while participating in a felony. According to court documents, Poole, who has a felony conviction from 2022, was seen on video giving a gun to Volchevong. Volchevong used the gun to shoot multiple times at Anthony Chris Allen, who was severely injured. Iowa City police were called Saturday to the 300 block of Iowa Avenue near the parking ramp where they found Allen suffering from gunshot wounds. Allen was taken to the hospital to be treated for serious injuries. Volchevong had his first appearance in court Tuesday and is being held in the Johnson County Jail on cash bail totaling $165,000. Poole had his first appearance Thursday and is being held on a $5,000 cash or surety bond. Also on the Iowa Today page is a story written by Emily Anderson of the Gazette, CR Motorcyclist Hurt in Crash. Dateline, Cedar Rapids. A Cedar Rapids man was seriously injured Wednesday night in a motorcycle crash in rural Linn County, according to a Linn County Sheriff's Office news release. 51-year-old Joseph Serry was driving south on Lewis Access Road near Lewis Bottoms Road near Center Point when he failed to navigate a turn and drove off the road. Serry, who was not wearing a helmet, suffered life-threatening injuries. He was transported to the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics by a lifeguard air ambulance. The crash is being investigated by the Linn County Sheriff's Office. Still more news of that type. Another story written by Emily Anderson. It says, Iowa City man accused of firing at a group is arrested in Colorado. Dateline, Iowa City. An Iowa City man was arrested in Boulder, Colorado on Wednesday by the U.S. Marshals Service in connection with a shot-fired incident in Iowa City in February. 27-year-old Camonte D. Brown is accused of shooting once at a group of people outside Pint's Bar just after midnight, February 26th. He faces charges of going armed with intent, reckless use of a firearm, person ineligible to carry dangerous weapons, and intimidation with a dangerous weapon. According to a criminal complaint, Brown was involved in a fight with a group at 118 South Clinton Street outside the bar. He pulled out a gun and chambered a round, then handed the gun to someone else while he engaged in the fight. After the fight, when people in the group were, quote, a considerable distance away, Brown brandished the gun again and shot once toward them, according to the complaint. No one was hit, but the bullet damaged Old Capitol Town Center. Brown will be extradited to Iowa to face charges. Now we go to the Insight page, where we have a Gazette editorial today whose headline says, AEA cuts are short-sighted. The report says the Republican-controlled Iowa legislature's timing couldn't be worse. In the final budget bill of the year before adjournment, majority Republicans approved a $30 million decrease in funding for area education agencies, or AEAs. The bill included a $7.5 million cut required by law and a $22 million decrease agreed to by GOP leaders. Republicans are quick to point out that 8 of Iowa's 9 AEAs will see more funding than last year due to a 3% increase in state aid to public schools. But as with those schools, the increase is less than what's needed to maintain adequate services. As for timing, the approved legislation earlier this year provided billions of dollars worth of tuition assistance to help families sending their children to private schools. It's the AEAs that provide special education assistance to public and private schools, many of which don't offer special education programs. So, at a moment when demand for AEA services is poised to rise, the legislature cuts their funding. It's not like the state doesn't have the money. State law allows lawmakers to spend 99% of projected revenues, but GOP leaders crafted a budget that spends 88%. That creates a $2 billion budget surplus. A chunk of that money will go into the Taxpayer Relief Fund, which is expected to top $3.5 billion and is intended to cover the cost of tax cuts. Republicans' determination to squeeze the state budget and create a massive new entitlement program for private school families has left little room for adequate public education investments. Senator Janet Peterson, in a statement this week, says Iowans should be outraged. Taking away millions of dollars from our children's special education services in every region of the state to pay for their new private schools voucher program is wrong. She says Governor Reynolds should veto the cut. We agree. Reynolds should veto the AEA cut, especially if she wants to provide real education choices to all Iowa families, as she has advocated. If AEAs can't meet demand for a special education services, many Iowa families will be cut off from private options. Public school students will also suffer. It's not fiscally responsible to curtail needed services in the interest of running up surpluses and covering the cost of wave after wave of tax cuts. It's irresponsible budgeting, and the governor should correct the legislature's mistake. And that is today's Cedar Rapids Gazette editorial. And before we take our break, we do have one community letter today, and it comes from Megan Farrell of Fairfax, who says, how to truly show appreciation to your child's teacher every week? 1. Speak about teachers positively and respectfully. If you personally disagree with the way school staff are handling something, keep it between adults. Children don't need to be burdened with the knowledge and stress of adult conflicts. 2. If your child's teacher reaches out to you for support, hear them out and do what you can on your end. If a teacher takes the extra time to make a call and/or send an email, they are past the point of being able to handle the situation on their own. 3. Talk to your child about the challenges of teaching a room full of children. Preparation, classroom management, diverse learning styles, etc. Teach them that they can assist their instructor by doing their personal best and encouraging those around them to do that as well. 4. Teach your child to advocate for themselves by asking for help. This helps a teacher assess the effectiveness of their lessons and teaching style and alleviate frustration on both ends. A person becomes a teacher because of their love and passion for the subject matter and their desire to pass it on, certainly not for the paycheck. 5. Finally, help your children to see their teachers as people. People who have personal lives, a personal history, personal struggles, and even bad days. This creates a foundation for kindness, compassion, and empathy. Teachers aren't perfect, but neither are our children. And that's today's community letter from Megan Farrell of Fairfax. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, May 19th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. First, we take a look at the shorter other notices from Anamosa. Casey E. Spiker, age 40, died Wednesday, May 17th. Iowa Cremation of Cedar Rapids will be in charge of the arrangements. From Belle Plaine, Cheryl Marie Grant, age 72, died Tuesday, May 16th. The Fry Funeral Home of Tipton will be in charge of those arrangements. Also from Belle Plaine, Wilma Parazek, age 89, died Thursday, May 18th. Assisting the family will be the Phillips Funeral Home of Keystone. Also from Belle Plaine, Carol J. Milner, age 86, died Wednesday, May 17th. In charge of the services there will be the Raybeck Newhouse Funeral Service of Belle Plaine. From Bennett, Alberon, and Garrison, Brian Keith Anderson, age 59, died Monday, May 15th. Assisting the family will be the Phillips Funeral Home of Vinton. From Kelowna, Alan Wagler, age 94, died Thursday, May 18th. The Yoder Powell Funeral Home of Kelowna will be in charge of those arrangements. From Tiffin, Tina L. Turley, age 60, formerly of Amana and Cedar Rapids, died Tuesday, May 16th. Assisting the family will be the Poppage Cuba Funeral Service of Cedar Rapids. And from up in Waukon, Janice J. Dervell Winter, age 86, died Wednesday, May 17th. Assisting the family will be the Martin Grau Funeral Home of Waukon. Now for the longer, more detailed funeral notices. From Cedar Rapids, Edgar Warren Herman, age 99, passed away peacefully at the Woodlands of the Methwick community on May 15th. He will be interred at the Columbarium at St. Paul's Methodist Church. No services are planned at this time. Memorials may be made to the Methwick community or to Camp Courageous. Paul Edward Popisle, age 83, of Marion, passed away peacefully on May 16th at St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. Per his request, a graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. Monday, May 22nd at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery in the Garden of Cross section. From Cedar Rapids, Samantha Amanda Mahnke, M-A-H-N-K-E, age 33, was called home on the evening of May 15th. The obituary says nothing about services. Gary Pentenberg, age 71, of Martell, died peacefully on Wednesday, May 17th, at home. A celebration of life will take place from 10 till noon Saturday morning, May 20th, at Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services in Cedar Rapids, and attire will be casual. From Tulsa, Oklahoma, Gary Lee Cooper left his life peacefully with family and friends by his side on May 2nd. Gary suffered from multiforme, an aggressive brain tumor. In Iowa, a celebration of life will be held at Christ Community Church, 3000 Albernette Road in Marion. Services will be held at 5 p.m. June 3rd, with reception and visitation to follow. Gary will be laid to rest at Jordan's Grove Cemetery in rural Central City, Iowa. Now it's time to move on to the sports page. It's state track time, and Jeff Linder of the Gazette has filed a story called An All-Time Best. It's not just talk anymore. It's a done. It's in the record books. Iowa City High and Johnston ran the fastest boys' 3,200-meter relay race in state history Thursday morning. City's Amon Smith, Eamon Nordeldame, Ford Washburn, and Truman Thompson zipped to an all-time Iowa best in 7 minutes, 37.66 seconds. Thompson, who anchored in 151.8, said, "I think this is the happiest I've ever been. With 300 meters to go, it felt like I was already starting my kick. With 200 to go, I had to give everything." City High and Johnston both eclipsed the former record, which was set by Ames in 2015. Thompson said, "All year we've been talking about getting that record. It's been in the back of our mind." Thursday marked only the second time all season that Smith, Nordame, and Washburn, along with Thompson, ran together in the 3200 relay. The only other occasion was at the Drake relays. Both ended in gold. At Drake, Smith anchored, but in a last-minute decision, according to Smith, the order changed Thursday. It worked out magnificently. Smith said, "My job was to open us a gap, go out from the gun. I wanted to demoralize the competition." Johnston didn't back down and ran even with the Little Hawks until Thompson's final surge. Thompson said, "Once I started, I was in rhythm. I was starting to realize that I belong here. It helped a lot that Johnston was on our tail the whole way. I know it really pushed me to go faster." The 3200 relay triumph, plus second-place finishes by Washburn in the 3200 and Matt Schnackenberg in the high jump, staked City High to its lead in the 4A boys team race. And Jeff Linder writes more about that high jump competition. In the door, do-or-die scenario, T.J. Jackson did. He said, "I really needed this. If I didn't win this, I don't know what I'd do." Needing to clear a career best 6 feet 11 inches on his final attempt to stay alive in the 4A boys high jump, the Linmar senior did with room to spare. And that jump, as it turned out, determined the event's outcome at the state track and field meet. Jackson and Iowa City High's Matt Schackenbach both cleared 6:11, with Jackson the winner on misses. "That was a lot of fun," Schackenbach said. "The atmosphere was so good. The competition was great. Four guys, Jackson, Schackenbach, Cedar Falls' Jacob Keeler, and Davenport West's Idris Thomas, all cleared 6:09. Keeler made it on his first attempt and was in a good position to win it all. But Schackenbach made 6:11 on his final try, also a career high, then skirted off the mat, hurdled a nearby barrier, and bear-hugged a coach on a bar as the bar wobbled and stayed on. Schackenbach said, "I prayed a lot before that last jump. Please, God, just one more jump." He said, "That left it up to Jackson. 6:11 felt really good, really good." Schackenbach is a great jumper. City High's crowd was really good. "Our crowd was really good," said Jackson. "It was a great atmosphere for sure." Jackson's clearance gave him the edge. Both missed twice at 6:11 and once at 6:09. Schackenbach's miss at 6:07 was the difference. The two survivors went to 7 feet and both missed three times. Schackenbach said, "I had to ask God one more time for another jump, but my loan ran out." Led by an all-time Iowa best in that 3,200 meters, Iowa City High is the day one leader in the 4A boys team race. Through five events, the Little Hawks have 29 points in the bank. Linmar is second with 22, followed by Ankeny and Johnston with 18 apiece. Ford Washburn was second to Dowling star Jackson Heidish in the 3200. After a relatively slow start, Heidish broke from the pack and won in 9:06.86. Washburn finished at 9:13.16 and said, "I didn't have it today. I didn't feel great. I haven't felt great the last 2 weeks." Linmar's Keaton Roskopf and Cedar Rapids Prairie's Tate Jones were second and third in the boys' discus. Lucas Morrison of Waukee Northwest won that with an effort of 183.1. Roskopf's best throw, 181.5, was his first throw. Jones threw 170.11. It took an awesome runner, that's the words of Sydney Schwarzendruber, to foil the Cedar Rapids Kennedy twins' hopes of a 4A girls' 400-meter sweep. Sydney says, "We've run against Norwalk's Claire Farrell since she was little. She's an awesome runner. Obviously, we wanted to win, but we're happy with it." Farrell finished in 55.62 seconds. Addison Schwarzenegger was next at 56.51, Sydney in 56.79. Addison said, "This was a success. We were both in the 56s. Kennedy's in fourth place in the 4A girls standings with 14 points. Ankeny leads with 27. Then it's Pleasant Valley with 18 and Johnston with 15. Iowa City West's Mina Tate and Cedar Rapids Prairie's Lila Canny tied for fourth in the high jump, clearing 5-2. Lots more state track events from Rob Gray, a correspondent with the Gazette, who talks about Class 2A. As the bell tolled, Mid-Prairie's Danielle Hostetler found herself in the best position possible, staring at the back of the leader, lurking, not languishing, and poised to pounce. Hostetler, who surged to her third straight title in the 3,000 meters during the 2A state track and field meet, says, "It's truly a choice between, do I want to make it hurt bad enough? I chose to take the temporary pain." She took it and ran with it. Hostetler powered past second place finisher Hillary Trainer of Sumner Fredericksburg as she entered the backstretch and never looked back, finishing in a gold-worthy time of 10:20.73. Hostetler's three-peat in the event came on the heels of back-to-back state titles from her sister, Marie. Their older sister, Anna, won the 3000 back in 2017, so it's been 7 years since anyone not named Hostetler triumphed in the event at the 2A state meet. Hostetler said, "My sisters have taught me a lot, just about having a hard work ethic and all that. But I also know that I am my own person, and I also love to add to their legacy." Hostetler bettered her previous state title-winning times by about 7 and 15 seconds, respectively. So she's not just making a name for herself. She's setting the stage for a possible fourth straight state title next season. She said, "I'm so thankful. All the glory to God. He gave me the courage and the strength to just keep pushing and to not give up. My goal coming in was to just hang on to whoever was in first and then pass them at the end. Mission accomplished, again, but the pain lingered as her smile broadened." She said, "I tend to hit the ground after my races just because I've given it everything that I've got." That's precisely what Williamsburg's Derek Weisskopf did en route to a runner-up finish in the 2A boys' shot put. The Iowa football recruit threw the shot a personal best 55 feet, 5.75 inches, but couldn't seriously challenge champion Spencer Kessel of Loiza Muscatine, who won the top throw at 64 feet, 1.25 inches. Weisskopf, who will also compete today in the discus and high jump, said, "It was in my mind, telling myself I could do it, just believing in myself and coming out here and competing against the best in the state right now. I had a lot of fun." Jeff Linder has a report on 3A by saying CPU's Maui just an inch away. Sydney Maui is a self-described, self-taught high jumper. He's a sophomore at Center Point Urbana and said, "We don't have a jumps coach. We're supposed to get one next year. Hopefully that can help me get an inch or two higher." Another inch or two and, well, that would have made a big difference Thursday afternoon. Maui cleared 5 feet 6 inches and earned Class 3A second place girls' honors at the state track and field meet Thursday. She said, "I'm a little disappointed. I was hoping to win." London Warmoth of Adel ADM won the event at 5-7. After Maui missed twice at 5-7, someone in Maui's camp elected to put the bar at 5-8 for her last attempt. She narrowly missed. Warmoth's victory helped propel ADM to the team lead after the first day. Mount Vernon was third in the 3200 relay, and Libby Dix was third in the discus. Dix says she tweeted her back earlier this week, so she tempered her expectations until Thursday. She said, "I felt like I had a shot, and Wednesday I would have taken third, but today it just wasn't quite what I had hoped." The 400-meter dash was contested after press time. In boys' action, when the temperature rose Thursday, so did Jedediah Osgood's anxiety level. He said, "I was kind of nervous. We had similar heat last year, and I didn't run very well." There was no replay this time around. Osgood got out quickly and finished second in the 3A boys' 3,200-meter run. The Marion High School senior finished in 9 minutes, 27.39 seconds. Chase Laumann of Pella was the champion. Osgood said, "I don't like tactical races. I'm comfortable with the lead." Also in boys' competition, Cedar Rapids Xavier was fourth in the 3200 relay, and center point Urbana was fifth. Solon's Ben Campman and Adam Smith were third and fourth, respectively, in the discus. Jack Seidels of Independence was fifth. Looking a little bit at the local college softball scene, we have a story about Coe College. Co-freshman Marissa Vodica hit a walk-off home run and put a stake in Transylvania 6-5 in 9 innings Thursday in a Division III regional opener. Co at 32-8. It now advances to face Wisconsin Whitewater at 11 o'clock today in the double elimination tournament. In Fort Collins, Colorado, the University of Iowa softball team opened the National Invitational Softball Championships Thursday with a 6-3 win over UC Davis at the Triple Crown Sports Facility. Juniors Grace Baines and Briley Klosterman each had two hits. Iowa, at 32-27, faces South Dakota State at 1 o'clock today. And as far as college baseball goes, Iowa opened its final Big Ten series with a dominant 15-3 win over Northwestern on Thursday. Going back to the Iowa Today page for more news is a story written by Emily Anderson of the Gazette. Cedar Rapids woman dies in fire. Dateline Cedar Rapids. A woman was killed Thursday morning in a garage fire in southwest Cedar Rapids, according to the Cedar Rapids Fire Department news release. The department was called to the 1800 block of Hamilton Street Southwest for a fire in a separated garage. The small building was engulfed in flames when firefighters arrived, and they were unable to safely enter the structure to look for the woman, who was believed to be trapped inside. After several minutes of fighting the fire, it was extinguished enough that rescue teams were able to search the garage where they found the woman. She was removed from the building and treated on scene, then taken to a hospital where she was pronounced deceased. Her name has not been released pending notification of family. There was much debris in the structure which hindered firefighting, according to the release, and no firefighters were injured. The cause of the fire is still under investigation. Also, a story written by Trish Mahaffey of the Gazette, Marion teen to be charged as an adult. Dateline, Cedar Rapids. A judge ruled Thursday that a Marion teenager, initially charged in juvenile court, will be waived to adult court to face charges in the fatal shooting of 16-year-old Michael Alexander McCune on February 18th. Sixth Judicial Associate District Judge Nicholas Scott said that Baynon Barry, known as BJ, who was 15 when the fatal attack happened, isn't a good candidate for rehabilitation through juvenile court. Barry had been adjudicated in juvenile court on a previous charge of possession of a dangerous weapon and was on probation when he and three other teens are accused of killing McCune. During the hearing, Scott said that going through adult court will give Barry an opportunity to have a jury trial, which he wouldn't have in juvenile court. Scott's decision also was based on the gravity of the allegations. He revoked Barry's previous consent decree on the gun possession and his probation because the teen absconded for a month while still on probation after the fatal shooting. At the hearing, juvenile court officer Sam Moan recommended Barry be waived to adult court. Barry is accused of conspiring with Tremontez Lockett, age 16, and Dante Irvin, age 15, also charged in a targeting attack on McCune over past conflicts. Moan said he didn't recommend that Barry stay in juvenile court because of the limited time for rehabilitation before he turns 18 and would be released. Assistant Linn County Attorney Shannon Powers said she agreed with Moen's assessment that there's no reasonable prospect for rehabilitation in juvenile court. She recommended revoking Barry's previous consent decree and probation. John Bishop, who is Barry's lawyer, argued that Barry's role in the shooting was limited. Irvin shot McCune and Lockett set up McCune by making arrangements for McCune to meet them at Tantera Apartments that morning, he said. Bishop asked the judge to keep Barry in juvenile court. Irvin also was charged in juvenile court and has a waiver hearing next month. Scott set Barry's initial appearance in district court for June 1st, where he will be formally charged with first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit a forcible felony, and going armed with intent. Lockett was charged in March with first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit a forcible felony, first-degree theft, and going armed with intent, and remains in the Linn County Juvenile Detention Center pending trial. Police found McCune with 8 gunshot wounds around 11:30 the morning of February 18th inside the entryway of the apartment at the Tantera Apartments. Also, a story written by Emily Anderson of the Gazette, Motorcyclist Hurt in Crash. Dateline, Cedar Rapids. A Cedar Rapids man was seriously injured Wednesday night in a motorcycle crash in rural Linn County, according to a Linn County Sheriff's Office news release. 51-year-old Joseph Sari was driving south on Lewis Access Road near Center Point when he failed to navigate the turn and drove off the road. It's a story written by Grace King of the Gazette. Schools move up last day to June 2nd. Dateline, Cedar Rapids. The last day of school for students in the Cedar Rapids Community School District will be June 2nd, one school day earlier than planned. The last day of school will be a normal Friday early dismissal, according to a news release from the district Thursday. Students will not have to report to school on June 5th. Schools are required by Iowa law to have 1,080 student contact hours. Cedar Rapids students have met that minimum requirement as of June 2nd, according to the news release. Initially, the last day of school was planned to account for weather-related cancellations. Other weather makeup dates were February 27th, May 31st, and will be June 1st. Grace King has another story, headlined, Parent Banned from Board Meetings Sues Cedar Rapids Schools. Dateline, Cedar Rapids. A Cedar Rapids resident is suing the Cedar Rapids Community School District, saying he was wrongfully banned from school property until further notice. Russell Hotchkiss was banned from district property January 10, 2022 for disruptive and threatening behavior, according to a letter to him cited in the lawsuit from former Superintendent Noreen Bush. Hotchkiss's child was in first grade at Hiawatha Elementary School in Cedar Rapids at the time. Bush died October 23, 2022, more than 2 years after being diagnosed with cancer. Failure to adhere to the no trespass order would result in Hotchkiss's removal from district property and could include assistance from state law enforcement, according to the letter, which was delivered to Hotchkiss's home by a Cedar Rapids police officer. Bush later modified that letter to clarify that Hotchkiss was allowed to drop off and pick up his son from school, according to the lawsuit. The letter cited school district policy 1007, which is called Conduct on School District Premises, and regulation 1002.2, which is called Visitors to District, as well as Iowa Code Chapter 723 and 716.7, which outlines expectations for how school officials and staff should be treated. The letter said Hotchkiss could communicate with the board in writing and could communicate directly with the Hiawatha Elementary School principal as a parent. Hotchkiss argues the policies cited in the letter are general policies about conduct by parents and community members while on district property. According to the suit, the policies have a general requirement for visitors to, quote, conduct themselves with respect and consideration for the rights of others, and specifically prohibits the possession of weapons, alcohol, and tobacco on district property. In the lawsuit, Hotchkiss asked for a jury trial. He also asked the court to rule that banning him from school board meetings is illegal and cannot be enforced. The lawsuit seeks to have the district penalized for each violation, paying him between $1,000 and $1,200 for each known violation and between $100 and $500 for any other violations, in addition to court costs and attorney fees, and an injunction against further violations of the Iowa Open Meetings Act. Hotchkiss spoke for over 30 minutes during a school board meeting on December 13, 2021, pleading for a mask mandate to be removed, threatening a lawsuit, and asking for school board members' resignations. A group of parents yielded their 5-minute apiece public comment period to Hotchkiss. Speakers are no longer allowed to yield their time to other speakers who signed up for public comment. But at no time during this meeting did any board member or district employee indicate that the practice of one speaker yielding time to another was not permitted, according to the lawsuit. After public comment was over, the December 13th meeting was disrupted when protesters shouted, "Take a vote and we will not back down." At the time, Tominski called for a 10-minute recess for the disruption to cease. By Iowa law, the public is allowed to speak only during designated public comment periods at board meetings. This was the third time the school board had been forced to take a recess because of people protesting the mask mandate in the fall of 2021. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Friday, May 19th. I'm your reader, Kelly Neff. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thank you for listening.